7:06, a snowy Saturday morning. We've been talking a little bit about the stimulus package that was signed into law by President Obama earlier this week. There are $8 billion in that package set aside for high-speed rail, which kind of catches my interest because I don't think that America has been keeping up with the rest of the world when it comes to travel by rail. We love our cars so much that for a lot of people, the idea of abandoning our own car, driving by ourselves wherever we're going, whether it's to work or a short distance or even a long distance, abandoning that is the last thing we want to do. But when you look at what other countries have done with their rail systems, particularly in Europe and throughout Asia, both China and Japan are far ahead of us in moving large numbers of people by rail at fairly high speeds. In fact, in some places, it's at speeds that are competitive with air travel, moving city to city, downtown to downtown. Rick Harnish is the executive director of the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association, has been lobbying and pushing for more high-speed rail throughout the United States, and particularly here in the Midwest. Rick, welcome to the Big 89 WLS.
Thank you for having me.
You must be thrilled with this $8 billion in the stimulus package.
It was very exciting to see, yes. And, and we're the more we learn about it, the more exciting it gets.
Tell me how much that is going to help get high-speed rail built. How much of an incentive will it be to the future of high-speed rail?
Well, you know, there are projects that have been on the books here in the Midwest. You know, getting 110-mile-an-hour service to St. Louis and Madison and St. Paul and Detroit. They've been on the books ready to go for 10 years and haven't moved. And this will get those projects not quite done, but pretty close to done. And then I'd like to see it result in the design work for true high-speed rail, where we would get to these places in 2 hours.
Why hasn't it been done yet?
You know, the reasons are so many, it's hard to make a small list. But basically, we've made a lot of decisions since World War I that led us in a different path, whereas other countries were fortunate in that they didn't make those kinds of decisions, so they had this available to them as it became available.
When we talk about high-speed rail, are we talking about a new rail system, or are we talking about upgrading Amtrak trains and using what we've got?
Both. So we can implement trains that go 100, 110 miles an hour within a couple of years.
What does a train go now? What's the average speed?
Well, the average speed is down around 50, but the top speed is 80.
Okay.
What we need to do is get the average speed on the existing trains up to 70. And then at that point, it becomes very competitive with driving, and in many cases, already very competitive with the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go faster than, let's say, 100, just to make it an even number, you really have to build new track, completely separate from everything else. You know, the trains sometimes leave that track and go on the old track, but the sections where you're going 200, 220 miles an hour, you need to build completely new track. And we haven't been talking about that in the Midwest. We'd like to see design start right away.
200 to 220 miles an hour?
Yeah. So the current design standard all around the world for new railroad track is 220 miles an hour.
Are there trains actually going that fast in Europe and in Asia?
Yes, absolutely. So China has one line going that speed, and France has two lines going that speed. Spain has a number that were built to that speed, but they're limited right now to 186 because of some signaling issues.
It seems to me that although $8 billion is a really large number, after all, it has nine zeros in it, that can't possibly be enough to get this really going throughout the United States. And I know how much the people in Washington and New York love what used to be called the Metroliner Corridor. I guess now it's called the Acela Corridor because that's the name of the fast train that they have there. I know how much they love that. I would think that a lot of this money is going to go to take care of them and that we're going to be left out.
That certainly is not the case. that, you know, we did have in 1965 the High-Speed Ground Transportation Act that was signed by President Johnson. And in that case, all of the money did go to the Northeast Corridor. But that was because the Northeast Corridor elected officials were the only ones who were truly asking for it. This time around, we have a president from Chicago who was personally involved in making this money a reality. So, and also, we already have the design work done for this 110-mile-an-hour network, so we're well-positioned to get a substantial portion of it.
Talking with Rick Harnish from the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association here on the Big 89 WLS. Most of the people who are listening to us in Chicagoland are people who aren't going to be traveling city to city all that much, unless they're business travelers. They're not going to be hopping on trains to Madison or St. Louis or other cities throughout the Midwest here on a regular basis, but they may be people who use the commuter trains to and from the city. So what is there to help them?
Well, it's all interrelated. So once you're in the city, you're using the same tracks. And there are some substantial upgrades that need to happen within the city that will make Metro service better and will also make the freight service through Chicago better. It's all very interrelated and stuff that needs to be done very quickly and can be done out of the stimulus. I'll also add that having train service changes the way people travel, not just which way they choose to travel, but how often they travel. And so suddenly places like Madison, Wisconsin become attractive for trips that probably you wouldn't have taken it before.
And it probably also affects the notion of a bedroom community.
That's absolutely true. Madrid, because they did not want to have suburban sprawl, actually built a high-speed line in part so that people could live in Bloomington, Illinois, or the equivalents of Bloomington or Champaign, and still work in downtown Madrid. And that way, they didn't have to build, these folks didn't have to move from the equivalent of their downstate to suburban sprawl. They just stayed where they were and moved their jobs to the city.
Now, Rick, in the countries that have this, is it heavily subsidized by the government, or do tickets alone cover the cost of that travel?
Well, the first thing you have to keep in mind is that the last time anybody did any real studies on this was 1995. And at that time, highway users got, depending upon how you measured it, between $450 billion and $750 billion in subsidies every year. So that's, you know, you adjust for inflation and the fact that highway construction costs have gone up so much, you're close to $1 trillion in subsidies going to highway users every year here in this country. It's difficult to imagine anyone competing with that as a private business.
So you foresee this rail initiative as the equivalent of Eisenhower building out the interstate highway system in the 50s?
Absolutely.
And since we subsidize the highways, we should subsidize the railways and move people that same way.
Well, what happens if you move people into trains and buses? So, you know, this is really true in at a much bigger scale within the city. If you move people into transit so that we expand the transit system, get better buses, get streetcars back here in the city, you'll actually reduce the cost of government because highways are so very expensive and the subsidies for highways right now are really draining our treasuries. If you can get people into transit, it cuts the cost of government.
Can you move freight on high-speed rail?
You can't. Not heavy coal trains like we have a lot of here in the Midwest. But on the high-speed track, you can move like FedEx freight, mail, and things like that.
Because I would think that if you could get business in this country to get behind this, that gives it a much better chance of moving forward even more.
Yeah, and that's one thing that really needs to happen. Business leaders around the country need to start saying that they need to get their cost of traveling down and their cost of shipping high-value goods down and get directly involved in lobbying for this kind of infrastructure.
What kind of energy runs these high-speed rail trains? Electric?
Well, yeah. So once you put the wires up, you've got a lot of flexibility in what kind of energy you use.
What do you mean?
So if you've got, you know, if you're running off electricity, you can do it, you know, coal, wind, nuclear, solar, whatever you've got available.
Mm-hmm.
And in France and Switzerland, both of those, none of their electric trains are powered by fossil fuels.
Right. Well, France is almost 95% nuclear at this point.
Right.
What about magnetic levitation trains? My wife and I were at a World's Fair in Vancouver in May of 1986, and we went to the Japanese pavilion, and behind it they had this track laid out with about a half mile long track with a magnetic levitation train on it, where the train, for the most part, doesn't even touch the tracks. We're using magnets to propel this thing along the tracks and hovering above the tracks. Would that be part of what we would do here in America?
I really doubt it. You know, with a conventional train, you can go almost as fast as you can with a maglev, and the maglev tracks are just so much more expensive, and they're not as flexible. It's, you know, there's only one true maglev line in the world now that's between the Shanghai airport and its outer suburbs, and that thing was so expensive, they won't even tell you how much it cost. For what they spent on this 10 or 20 mile line, we could have built true high-speed rail across the entire Midwest.
Is there a chance that this is the beginning of the future of high-speed rail? I know this is what you're hoping will happen, that we'll see a massive build-out, not just in the Midwest and the Acela Corridor in the East, but I know California's been talking about it. Are other parts of the country trying to move us in this direction?
Yeah, and it's one thing that's very exciting is that there are proposals for 110-mile-an-hour service all the way from Chicago to New York. Now, at 110 miles an hour, you can get to New York in about, 11 or 12 hours. And, you know, you put a nice high-quality sleeper room in those trains, and suddenly the train is very competitive with flying because...
Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is. Because if you're a businessman and you're in downtown Chicago and you want to work until the end of the day, the soonest you're going to be in bed in New York is 2 a.m. But if you can finish the end of the day, walk over to the train station, get on the train, have a good, high-quality meal, get a good sleep on the train, and then get a shower on the train and wake up in the middle of downtown Manhattan, you're a lot better off.
And you save the cost of the hotel room.
Right.
Yeah. Personally, I'm still going to get on the plane. I'll be honest with you. I know I can get there in 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever the flight time is from O'Hare to LaGuardia, not counting all the delays at the airport. And I'm still going to want to get in that actual bed. I just feel like if I got on that train bed, to me, every time I see it in movies, and I've never been on one in real life, but every time I see it in movies, it looks like a guy who's 6'4 like me, not going to work.
But the other thing is that, you know, they're going to have a high-speed train between Paris and Madrid within the next couple of years. And it's going to do it in 7 hours. And right now, that trip that we just described, you've got the Kennedy Expressway, O'Hare, LaGuardia, and Van Wyck. You just don't know what's going to happen on any of those four links. The best you can do it, if everything goes right, is 5 hours. So suddenly you're getting into the range that even connecting us to, you know, what's a very important city to us economically by train becomes very practical.
So $8 billion in the new stimulus package. How soon will Chicagoland see some of this actually coming to fruition?
It looks like in the next couple of years. The first step is this year, because of some other funding, Illinois will be putting in the new signals that will allow trains to go 110 between Joliet and Springfield. Hopefully they can get stimulus money into that project so they can extend that project all the way from Joliet down to Alton. That makes a significant cut right away. Hopefully within the next 3 years we will see new service starting to Madison, Rockford, Rock Island, Iowa, and Iowa City, and get that St. Louis trip to down under 4 hours.
Any chance any of this is going to make the L less expensive?
There is a piece of the stimulus package that goes into maintenance money for the L. It won't relate to the fares in any way.
Mm. Rick, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rick Harnish, Executive Director of the Midwest High Speed Rail Association. For more, you can go to his website, MidwestHSR, for High Speed Rail, MidwestHSR.org. 721 with Paul Harris on the Big 89 WLS.